Booster.
Go.
Retro.
Go.
Vital.
We're go fly.
Guidance.
Guidance go.
Procedures.
Go.
Capcom.
We're go fly.
Launch control, this is Houston. We are go for launch.
This is Space Talk, a weekly program that highlights America's space program and what's new in space flight from around the globe. And now, with the past, present, and future of space exploration, here is Jim Behnke.
And good afternoon from Florida's Space Coast, home of the most skilled aerospace workforce in America. I'm Jim Behnke, and this is the October 16th, 2010 edition of Space Talk, brought to you by Space Florida, driving state economic development across the global aerospace enterprise. Well, thank you so much for joining us today on this show that is about your space program. We have a lot of ground to cover, so you can expect this next hour to fly by at the proverbial warp speed. First off, I do want to acknowledge the new sponsor of our program here and say thank you to Space Florida. If you're not familiar with what Space Florida is doing to help grow our aerospace economy and support space education initiatives in the state, among many other activities, then I invite you to stay tuned to the show, not only today, but in the coming weeks as we address some of the opportunities Florida has to maintain its leadership in space. Before we do spend some time with folks from Space Florida, and before we talk to my first guest, who is going to be Murphy Wardman of the Space Walk of Fame in Titusville, I want to just quickly comment on a couple of space news events of the past week. First off, how about that rescue in Chile this past week? What a great moment for the families of those who were trapped underground. A great moment for the nation of Chile and, of course, its leadership, and for especially the members of the NASA team who helped in so many ways to make the miners' safe rescue possible. You know, for so many years here at the Kennedy Space Center, we have seen our workforce pull miracles out of nowhere to make things happen that really shouldn't have been possible in the first place. And after a while, you almost come to expect it from this group and even take it for granted. But again, how great it was to be reminded that NASA, not only here, but across all of the field centers in the nation, truly our entire space community, still does have that can-do spirit and certainly the expertise to back it up and help make miracles happen, not only in the far reaches of outer space, but from beneath the depths of our own planet. And speaking of innovation, congratulations also this week to the Burt Rutan, Sir Richard Branson, and the entire Scaled Composites and Virgin Galactic team for their successful drop test of the VMS Enterprise over the Mojave Desert. The event took place last Sunday. If you're not familiar with the Enterprise, this is the vehicle that, well, by all accounts, should be the first to actually begin flying tourists on suborbital hops to the edge of space. We don't know exactly when that will be just yet, but this drop test certainly puts them, or at least maintains the schedule. Whenever that is, 370 people have already signed up and paid their deposits for what amounts to about $200,000 a seat. It was fascinating to note, especially for us locally here, that in discussing the successful drop test with reporters, that Sir Richard finally admitted publicly, yeah, he's talked about it before, but this was a very public venue, that he is eyeing the Space Coast as another location for his space tourism efforts. Initially, they're going to fly out of New Mexico. And of course, I've always been convinced that they would begin flying elsewhere as they gained experience and the demand for the seats increased. Certainly, airliners, when start up, maybe begin at one or two fields and then expand to other airports as the demand allows. So that's certainly going to be the case here. Branson had some nice things to say, by the way, about Space Florida's involvement to that end, and we'll talk more about that later in the program. But for now, let's turn our attention to the Space Walk of Fame, where in just a few hours, a monument will be dedicated at Space View Park in Titusville with the help of former astronauts Bob Crippen and Bob Cabana. Of course, Crippen is also a former director of the Kennedy Space Center, while Mr. Cabana is the current director and occupant of the fourth floor at KSC's headquarters building. And joining us on the phone from Titusville, from the Space Walk of Fame museum up there, is the man whom many credit for making this monument happen in the first place. He's a veteran engineer who spent 38 years working out at the Cape on Atlas and Centaur and a variety of programs, Murphy Wardman. Murphy, thanks for joining us on the program today, sir.
Very good. How are you doing?
Well, we're doing great. So tell us, what is this monument for, and how did it come about?
Okay, on Tuesday at 4 o'clock, we're going to dedicate this monument. About 2 years ago, I was bugging Charlie Mars, who's the president of our foundation, that we needed to build a monument to honor the people that were killed at the Cape doing their job. And so I've been working on it since then. We finally came up with 37 names, and we've got some that we don't know who they were.
Mm-hmm.
And we had it published in Today, and I was hoping that somebody would call us and say, you know, that was my relative, whatever. But anyway, the monument that we're putting in is just a temporary one for the time being. We're using one of the puddle pylons, and we put all the names on, and then we're going to have the dedication, as I said, on Tuesday. And like you said, Cabana's going to be there, and Crippen.
Okay.
And also an Air Force representative, Colonel Lovett.
Oh, sure, yeah.
And not to leave them out, okay?
Yep.
So that's how we got there. And I was hoping that anybody that is listening will come to the ceremony. And the list was published again today in the Today newspaper. And if they would call in and say, hey, I know, you know, the relatives, we'll get a hold of them and have them come.
Okay, and I have to apologize. I had it down as being today, but it's not. It is Tuesday, the dedication ceremony,
yeah,
4 o'clock in Titusville.
Yeah, I didn't want to correct you.
That's okay. You can. Everybody else does.
Yeah, I didn't want to jump on your back.
So it's Tuesday, and again, remind folks where you're at up in Titusville. Where will this event be?
Okay, we're in the north end of Titusville, and as you come up Highway 1 and you get up to Main Street, you turn right on Main Street and go down to the street that's in front of, goes by our museum,
mm-hmm.
and turn left, and you'll see the monuments. Mercury is on the right, Gemini's on the right, Apollo's on the left in the water retention area, and the shuttle monument, which we'll eventually build, will be further down.
Okay.
And so that's where it is. We hope everybody comes.
Okay, great. Well, Murphy, if you would just stand by for a moment as we're about to take a quick break, and when we come back, we want to talk some more about it. I've been surprised, you know, by the number of people. I think other people are too, and there have been so many incidents out there, and I don't mean to say too many, but there have been incidents out there that a lot of folks aren't aware of. A lot of folks assumed it was the Apollo 1 fire was really the big event out there that anyone lost their lives, and certainly those astronauts are included in this list. But there have been a couple other kind of accidents out there that I think are worth talking about and talking about the lessons we learned from that. So we're going to do that with Murphy here in just a few seconds here. Don't forget that you're invited to join us anytime with your questions or comments. Give us a call at 768-1240, 321, the area code. AT&T Wireless customers can dial us at *1240 to reach us. Or if you're listening online, you want to just send us some email, send it to spacetalking@AOL.com. Well, again, we'll be back with a moment with Murphy Wardman. For now, this is Space Talk brought to you by Space Florida. I'm Jim Banky, and you're listening to WMMB.
And now back to Space Talk on WMMB.
And welcome back to Space Talk, brought to you by Space Florida. Once again, our phone line's open at 321-768-1240 for your questions and comments about anything having to do with the space program. And you can always contact us via email. The address is spacetalking@AOL.com. The computer screen is up right here in front of me, waiting your questions and comments, if you'd like. And now we return to the phone lines, where Murphy Wardman of the Space Walk of Fame has been telling us about a new monument to be dedicated Tuesday up in Titusville, remembering those workers at the Kennedy Space Center and Cape Canaveral Air Force Station who died in the line of duty. And Murphy, I want to get into this a little bit. We've talked about there were 38 names on here. And of course, the public knows of Challenger and they know of Columbia. And those aren't names that are on here because those were in-flight mishaps. But you do have the Apollo 1 crew on here from the Apollo 1 fire. Of course, that taking place on the ground here in 1967. But tell us, and it's kind of hard to use the word highlights, but tell us some of the other accidents that have happened out here that folks talk about and still remember that those names are included on here. What comes to mind right away?
Well, I think what comes to mind are things that happened that caused us to change the way that we did things. And back in 1960, a gentleman named Joseph Siebel, he was checking out a squib with a meter. And after that, we were required to use a meter that had limited current capabilities. So that changed how we did things.
And let's talk a little more basic than that. So he's up there and he's testing voltage on
a checking the resistance of the squib.
And what is a squib?
A squib is the pyrotechnic that will fire. They used to use flares on downrange because the radar wasn't that great, and so these flares would pop out as they went downrange.
Okay.
And so there was a squib that fired each one of these flares.
Okay.
And he was verifying the squib was good. And the meter he used set the squib off, which then created a problem because the strobe fired into his stomach and killed him.
Okay.
And I remember that. And I also remember that spin test facility, and I don't know if you brought that up earlier or not. I can't remember. But the spin test, they had a solid motor that was covered with vinyl, and they pulled the vinyl off.
Right.
And when they did that, the static charge that was on the vinyl bled over to the vehicle and set it off. And this thing spun around in the spin test facility and killed these three guys. And after that, we developed a vinyl that was used that when you grounded it, it would ground the static off.
Mm-hmm.
So then, even when the astronauts, when they died in 1967, it was because of a routing harness problem. And so... we addressed a lot of that. Teflon wire was starting to be used, and we found out that Teflon wire, when you had a curve against a metal brace, it would migrate away, and then you'd have a short.
Okay.
So we move on, and then, the exposure in the shuttle thrust section where the guys died from inhaling GN2.
Yeah, and I think when you talk about the spin test facility as being one of the big instances, I think that's the one that a lot of other people remember the most.
Probably do. And, if you look at the list and you go down, and unfortunately, a lot of these are people that fell off the tower or were killed by something falling off the tower.
Yeah, and that one, Murphy, kind of surprised me a little bit, because, again, I knew the spin test. I knew about the incident, and just to flesh out those details a little bit, it was in March of 1981. You're less than a month away from the launch of the first space shuttle, Columbia, in April of 81. It was April 12th, and on March 19th, they're doing a practice countdown test out there. The aft engine compartment, the rear engine compartment of the shuttle, has to be filled with gaseous nitrogen to to make everything inert in there in case anything combustible lets loose. And so the hatch is open, and these three guys don't know it, but they walk in or crawl into the space and immediately pass out from the nitrogen. And, of course, they, you know, I think two died right away and one died several days later. But for our modern shuttle era, that's the one that, that we remember most. But I guess my question is, you know, so many of these have to do with people falling, and you just think, well, didn't they have to wear safety belts or – you know, I mean, were these just really unique situations that, that just unfortunately got away from us?
Well, I think the builders of towers have a little different feeling on their safety requirements at that time. You couldn't do it now.
Right.
But I think back then, you know, these guys would walk the beams, and you wouldn't catch me doing that.
No, and you look at those old documentaries of people like, you know, building the Empire State Building or whatnot, and you're, you know, you're way up and just walking. And of course, the, you know, we have rockets, and rockets are tall things, and we need support structures and buildings to go around them. And so in a way, you'd think it'd be natural that you'd have those kind of incidents.
I think the amazing thing about this is if you look at the list, there were few people that died due to an operational problem.
Mm-hmm.
And if you think of all the hazardous gases we had out there, exotic fuels, you know, we didn't know what hydrogen, how it was going to be react back in the early days when we started the Centaur. And we didn't have infrared cameras. You didn't know that there was a fire.
Yeah.
You know, unless you carried a broom with you, and it caught on fire.
Right.
Similar to the canary in the mine shaft.
Hydrogen burns invisibly.
Yeah, invisibly, and we had no way of telling that. And but I think the list, not having a lot of operational deaths, is just a tribute to the engineers back there and the technicians. They still had a concern about what they were doing. I was an explosive engineer put on since gosh know when, and I was always worried about being complacent about it because one little, you know, if you don't follow the safety rules, believe me, it's going to bite you.
Well, and I think that, and I think you're right, the list, when you consider what a huge area it is, how many thousands of people have worked out at the Cape of all sorts of types and backgrounds and experiences and levels of experience, levels of skill. Again, the hazardous work that's done out there. You know, I remember just something, you know, everyone thinks about the launch as being the most hazardous time. Well, that may be true for the astronauts and for the unmanned rockets themselves. But, you know, I remember, you know, KSC launch director Bob Seek teaching me at one point that, you know, this, if the launch is the most hazardous thing they do, the second most hazardous thing they do out there that anybody does is actually fueling up the rocket to fly. And you think of moving all of that energy, that hydrogen, that oxygen, the kerosene, whatever it is, and to have so few people on this list compared to what you think any other industrial activity could have is a true testament to the safety culture that's out there and the procedures that are in place and the lessons that you learn when something bad does happen. And so that's a good story.
Yeah, you know, the thing is that I was surprised in trying when I first started to build this list. I thought that the safety engineers at the Cape would have a complete document.
Yeah.
Of everybody, and it turned out that wasn't true, and which really surprised me because you don't want to repeat what you did before.
Right.
And so, you know, but last 20 years been a little different when I was out there, and You know, even in finding the first guy that died at the Cape, whose name was Fred Adams, and he fell off an Atlas service tower.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, it started off, you know, with people falling off towers.
Yeah,
and
just amazing. Well, Murphy, and you know, we do need to wrap up with you here, and just also just want to say thanks, you know, so much for that effort, for bringing us the information. I know that, you know, the from what I've heard from others, the personal effort you've put into this for the last couple of years to track down these names and these stories, to collect them, to make sure they're accurate, to make sure they're as complete as possible. You know, and then to make this memorial happen, a lot of it is owed to you. And so this community does owe you a debt of gratitude, and the space community does appreciate this. And once again, as we say goodbye to Murphy, Tuesday, 4 o'clock, up in the Titusville Space Walk of Fame, a public ceremony. Go up and be a part of that ceremony. We encourage you to do that and pay your respects and your memories and all of that. It's a long overdue memorial, and I'm glad that it's there. We're going to take a quick five-minute break here. When we back, more about Space Florida as we're joined by Frank DiBello and Pat McCarthy. We'll be back in 5 minutes after a check with your news, weather, and sports. This is Space Talk, brought to you by Space Florida. I'm Jim Banky. You're listening to WMMB.
If it's happening in space, Jim Banky is there. Okay, well, not in space, but he's all about it. This is Space Talk on WMMB.
It sure is. Absolutely all about space. Welcome back to our second half of Space Talk on WMMB, brought to you by Space Florida, driving state economic development across the global aerospace enterprise. Well, once again, 321-768-1240 is our number to call into the studio here. We got a half hour left to go. Local AT&T wireless customers can dial star 1240. Or if you prefer to communicate online, again, send your email to spacetalking@aol.com. And, you know, we sure would love to hear from you. I try to keep the conversation moving when we have our guests here in a direction I think that most folks would be interested in. But, you know, it is always much more interesting to talk about what's on your mind. And so don't ever be afraid or nervous to call in. No question is out of bounds. No question is too stupid, to be frank about it. We encourage that communication, and we appreciate it when you do. By the way, you can, during the week, stay in touch with us here on Space Talk a variety of ways online. Via Twitter is the username is Space Talking, if you want to follow us that way. You can visit the WMMB webpage at WMMBAM.com. There you can download a recording of today's show. You can check out the Space Talk show page by using keyword Space Talk. And we also have a Space Talk page on Facebook. Posts are cross-linked between Facebook page at facebook.com/Space Talk. And those are linked to our Space Talk show page as well, again, at WMMBAM.com. And so don't hesitate to stay in touch with us. Let us know what's on your mind. Give us some ideas for programs, topics. A lot of you have been asking about some astronomy-related stuff and space exploration beyond the human spaceflight. And you'll be happy to know that we're talking to the Jet Propulsion Laboratory right now, and we'll have a Mars-related show on October 30th, which personally I think fits in right well with the Halloween weekend. Well, maybe we'll do our own War of the Worlds kind of thing here. As we mentioned at the beginning of the show, today this program does welcome a new sponsor, Space Florida. And truly, I couldn't be happier to have Space Talk associated with this fine organization. So to kick off this sponsorship, I wanted to spend some time and remind everyone about what Space Florida is all about, how it came to be a little bit, talk to you about some of the things they are working on to bring new business and most importantly, new jobs to not only the Space Coast, but to all of Florida. And to help me do this today in the studio, for now, my good friend Patrick McCarthy, Space Florida's Director of Spaceport Operations, is here with us. Welcome back to the show, Pat.
Thanks, Jim. Glad to be here.
Well, I think this ties you for the record as of most appearances on Space Talk.
A dubious honor, but I'm glad to be here anyway.
I think it ties it with your boss, Frank DiBello. Frank DiBello, the president of Space Florida, is out traveling, and we are trying to get a hold of him right now. He wanted to come on the show for just a couple of minutes, and if we can catch him between airplane flights and waiting in line at the airport, we'll bring him on briefly when we get him on the line. But in the meantime, we're going to continue to talk to Pat about Space Florida. And Pat, let's do Space Florida 101. Let's talk about, first of all, it's at the highest level. What is this organization all about?
Well, we're basically here to grow the aerospace industry in Florida, across the state, basically through economic development and business development kinds of initiatives, as well as spaceport operations. We run some launch pads out at the Cape that we received surplus from the Air Force. And we're trying to find people to put those kinds of assets to use and put people in touch with Florida-based companies that are involved in space and aerospace and grow their business. So we're trying to find the potential customers for all these 65,000-plus aerospace workers that there are in the state and try and find more business for them.
And it's a tough job, and I think one of the things that people need to understand is that it takes a long time before you get a lead to the time a deal is closed. So a lot of times we don't hear about what's going on, yet you're busy in the background working these things, and then suddenly the press release appears.
Yeah, it's a lot like the duck on the water. You don't see the feet paddling away quite as hard as they are, but the duck is still moving forward and maybe not so fast at times. You know, there's a lot of deals that we're working on, probably about 120-plus different companies and arrangements that we're working on now. And, of course, we have non-disclosure agreements with a lot of them because when in commercial business, you don't want your competitors to know what you're up to or what you're planning to do. So, like you say, a lot of those things won't become public knowledge until the press release is there and the agreements are signed because we work with our friends at Enterprise Florida to help get incentives for a lot of these companies. And if a company makes an announcement that they're coming to Florida, well, then they negate any potential economic incentives that they're going to get from the state. So the idea is to work those things before your agreements are signed so that you can get the tax breaks, the tax credits, the investment credits, and things like that that commercial companies are looking for. And then once those are in hand, then you make your public announcements. And so there are quite a few deals that are in the works now that should be breaking here very shortly.
Well, and I can talk a little bit about this, too. I want to the history of Space Florida. You know, an organization like Space Florida has been around for a long time, going back to the 80s, and it's had different names through the years, and it's focused on different areas throughout the years. Back in 2000, well, I guess it's been 2004, 2005. Then Governor Jeb Bush put together a commission on the future of space and aeronautics in Florida. At the time, I was working with the Space Foundation and was invited by the governor to sit as a commissioner on this panel. And at that time, there were at least three different organizations, all with their fingers in different parts of the space pie, if you will, all three representing the state of Florida for space-related activities. And some of the lines, and this is my opinion and my words, some of the lines between those organizations began to blur somewhat, where one thought it was supposed to be doing economic development, one thought it was supposed to be doing spaceport operations, one thought it was supposed to be doing education, one thought it was supposed to be doing finance. And some of those organizations started to kind of overlap with each other. I remember one instance in which, and I don't remember the details, but I remember the instance in which NASA put out a press release or an RFP, a request for proposals, to do some activity, and got back two official responses from the state of Florida. And at a time when we're trying to compete with other states to maintain or in some cases regain our leadership in space activities, you know, that isn't a good way of doing business. And so this commission got together and came up with a solution to consolidate some of these organizations. And then Space Florida was created out of that. And Space Florida, again, from my perspective, being responsible for economic, as Pat basically just said, economic development, operating a commercial spaceport activity on behalf of the state from a commercial standpoint, certainly doing a lot of the education initiatives, and then has the authority as this sort of this quasi-private government entity, which personally I still don't understand exactly what all that means after all these years. The lawyers do, so that's what counts. But the ability to finance things and offer financial packages and whatnot to make things happen, and a lot of neat buildings and facilities and structures that are part of the everyday operation at the Cape come directly from money that was raised by and invested by and provided by, and however all that works, again, finances and my expertise, by Space Florida. Is that a fairly fair assessment of the history as we both understand it?
That's a pretty good elevator speech to tell everybody what we're about, yes.
Well, that's good. Well, and so now, Pat, you know, we've always thought about a, you know, business, spaceport, education, finance, but you kind of mixed that up a little bit in a way. And in your latest kind of your market plan, your business plan, you've divided up the market into 10 different sort of strategies. And we've got about a minute and a half here before our next break. But can we talk a little bit about the areas that you're working on?
Well, there's several. The idea is to diversify the market that the aerospace industry has in Florida, because obviously with the shuttle program standing down, there's going to be a lot of workers available and a lot of assets. And the idea that we're looking at is to bring in several new non-traditional areas, things like life sciences, start to use microgravity utilization for pharmaceutical development, clean energy, civil protection, environmental monitoring, those kinds of things, which are generally not considered traditional markets in Florida. So we're trying to grow those areas and take some of the highly skilled workforce and the knowledge base that we have in Florida and apply those to some of these other high-tech industries, because they have the high-paying jobs that that we're looking to generate.
Yeah, when you look at this list of 10 items here, and you know, clean energy and civil protection, emergency management, that, you know, those are the kind that stand out and say, well, what in the world do they have to do with the space program?
Well, yeah, obviously things like clean energy. I mean, who developed solar panels? Well, the space program did.
Right.
Who is developing some of the best battery technologies that you're going to see in hybrid cars? Well, a lot of that started in the space industry, so the expertise is there. Things like light-emitting diodes, changing the kinds of light bulbs. You know, everybody's getting away from incandescent bulbs, but did you know that on the space station now they're testing out some new light-emitting diodes, or LEDs, which are very low power use and very efficient. So the idea is to take those skills that we have in the space business and turn those over to some other industries that can take advantage of those technologies.
Wow. And you don't normally make those connections. We're going to talk some more about this, because this is fascinating. There's some other ideas on the table here as well. But we're going to pause for a moment, take our final break of the show. When we return again, some final moments with Pat McCarthy, and your last chance to get in the program at 768-1240. This is Space Talk, brought to you by Space Florida. Again, I'm Jim Behnke. You're listening to WMMB.
With everything you need to know about America's space program, here is Jim Behnke.
And welcome back as we begin our final segment of today's edition of Space Talk, once again sponsored by Space Florida. And my guest for just a few more moments, in fact, is Patrick McCarthy, Director of Spaceport Operations for Space Florida. And before we continue our chat with Mr. McCarthy, I do want to pause for a moment and let you know that Space Talk today is brought to you by the Kennedy Space Center Visitor Complex, where for a limited time, Florida residents will get one free admission of equal or lesser value when they purchase one adult mission at regular price. Strap yourselves into the shuttle launch experience, tour behind the scenes, see launch pads, and walk beneath the massive moon rocket. And don't miss a chance to enjoy an IMAX film or meet a real astronaut, all at the Kennedy Space Center Visitor Complex. So bring a loved one, bring a friend, bring anyone, and come share a day of fun and a lifetime of inspiration. Hop on the internet and go to kennedyspacecenter.com to download your coupon, but do hurry. The offer is valid only through December 18th, 2010. Well, again, Pat McCarthy from Space Florida. Let's talk about this. I want to read these ten areas, these specific ways you've divided up the business pie, as it were, And some of them are obvious, and some of them maybe not so, as we were just talking about. Launch systems and support, satellite systems and payloads. Some of these are self-explanatory. Ground operations and support systems. Agricultural, climate, and environmental monitoring, an interesting one. Civil protection and emergency management. I feel like I'm reading off categories to a game of Jeopardy or something. International Space Station and human life sciences. Communications, cybersecurity, and robotics. Adventure tourism. Clean energy. Advanced material and new products. And so the idea is that there are people out there in this country that are working in these areas. Each of these tied or could be tied in some way to our space program. And if they could be in touch with Space Florida, you could help them find a way to expand their business, bring them here to Florida, and everybody wins. Is that the general idea?
That's the big thing, is to put these people in touch with the local workforces here in Florida that already have these skills and these this basis of knowledge in all these different areas, and apply those to some of these new markets that perhaps people haven't been familiar with in the past. I mean, the idea is to take the sensor technologies that we've developed for satellites and put them towards environmental and agricultural monitoring, and not just from orbit, but mm-hmm. on the ground as well, or on an airplane or something that can do these kinds of sensor technology testing.
Tie that all together in a big database, crunch it, and away you go.
That's right.
Okay. Well, now, and as you're looking at these areas, and you know, again, we're talking about when does the press release come out. What are some highlights? What are some things that are maybe recent that we can brag about?
Well, and some of them, not necessarily touched to each of these, but some of them that have been across all those areas. We recently signed a memorandum of understanding with the UK, the United Kingdom, and their trade and investment group, and we formed some international partnerships. And the idea there is to put Florida companies in touch with customers in the United Kingdom, in Britain, so that they can find out the kinds of services and technologies that are available here in Florida. So we'll put them together. We recently got a $400,000 grant from the Economic Development Administration to understand better what kinds of workforce we have available in the state, and what clusters, as they call them, that do these different things. So we're going to put those together with potential business contacts.
Well, that sounds great. And Pat, I was cutting you off a little bit. We do want to take a quick moment. We've just got about 2 minutes here. We're going to go to the phone lines where, Beth, guess who's on the phone? The president of Space Florida, Mr. Frank DiBello. Frank, welcome aboard, sir, for your record fourth appearance on Space Talk.
Well, let me thank you for the opportunity, Jim, and also thank you for the service that you provide through Space Talk. It really is good for the community and very good for the industry, and I congratulate you. We're very proud to be associated with it.
Well, and I just want to send right back to you, Frank, how much I appreciate your personal and professional friendship, your support of the program, you know, since the beginning, and your support now through this more formal partnership. I think it's going to give us each a chance to remind folks about the ways that Space Florida can help others do business here, and we look forward to working with you. Where are you off to right now, by the way? Can you say?
I will be headed over to Munich tomorrow for meetings with the European Space Agency and the equivalent in Europe of the kind of organization we just signed a memorandum of agreement with in the UK. And we hope to do a similar thing with a number of European companies that are all tied to the small satellite industry.
Oh, that's outstanding. We only had the moment there, Frank. We appreciate talking to you on the phone. Again, we'll be in touch with you, have you on the show again real soon. Safe travels.
Thank you, Jim, and I'll be happy to be on the program anytime. It's a great service, again, that you provide for the community, and we're grateful.
Good. Thanks
Take
again,
care.
Frank. Take care for you. And with that, we are kind of running out of time here. Pat McCarthy, thank you very much for being with me in the studio today and talking about Space Florida. We'll talk to you again real soon.
But I'll be back for Final Jeopardy whenever you're ready.
That's right. The bonus round. Well, that's good. Look, we just have a brief moment or two to remind you that Shuttle Discovery remains targeted for launch on November 1st at 4:40 p.m. Eastern Time. The six-member crew was in town this week for the practice countdown, which went well, especially for my longtime colleague at Florida Today, Todd Halverson, who got to ride with Discovery Commander Steve Lindsay in a shuttle training aircraft while the commander made practice approaches to the shuttle landing facility. Story and video at floridaday.com. Way to go, Todd, and I am extremely jealous. Let's say that for the record. By the way, since last week, the next Delta IV Heavy launch has moved to the right a little bit on its schedule. So Discovery's launch on November 1st will be followed, we hope, by the second launch of the Falcon 9 from SpaceX. They're going to try to hold to their target date of November 8th and are now advertising a launch window of 9 a.m. to 1 p.m. So we'll keep an eye on that schedule for you, let you know if there are any changes, and again, continue to cross our fingers that both of those launches go, the countdowns go well as their final preparations continue. Let's see here. Next week on Space Talk, among other things, we will preview for you some of the events surrounding Air Force Week, which is going to include a visit by the U.S. Air Force Thunderbirds. And I imagine we'll spend some time beginning to preview that next space shuttle mission, Discovery, again on November 1st, carrying a module up to the International Space Station, six-member crew flying aboard. And hopefully, maybe, even we'll brag a bit about the Minnesota Vikings win over the Dallas Cowboys, perhaps, which, by the way, you're going to be able to watch on Fox TV tomorrow afternoon. So we'll see what happens there. Once again, we remind you that you can stay in touch with Space Talk during the week at WMMBAM.com, where you can download a podcast of today's show just a little bit later tonight, and stay in touch with whatever else is going on. So anyway, I guess that's it for today. Thanks again for listening. Space Talk is sponsored by Space Florida and is a production of Mylas Solutions. Aaron Michaels is my personal chief engineer. The Home Mortgage Law Show is next here on WMMB. I'm Jim Bankey, and we'll talk to you again real soon.